Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient, comfortable. Ah.
Greetings, friends and fungal associates. Welcome to Completely Arbitrary, the podcast about trees and other related topics. I am one of your hosts. My name is Alex Croson, and I'm alongside, as always, the incredible, the edible, the one arborist to rule them all, Casey Clapp.
Alex Croson, it is I, Casey Clapp, son of Michelle. I am here to do what is necessary for the good of the world.
Wow.
The earth.
Casey.
Middle and beyond.
Original and middle.
I live in original earth. Yeah. It's a little underground.
It's vanilla earth.
It's vanilla earth. Now that is a name.
Yeah. Casey, here we are. At the beginning of a grand journey, it takes but a step to begin, my
one
friend.
One single step. And once we take that step, it's going to be the furthest we've ever been from where we started.
My apartment?
Yes. Isn't there, what did you call it, a long cut of every single time Sam took a step that someone cut in the line? One step further,
oh.
And it's the furthest I've ever been, and like did it for every single. Did you tell me this?
I don't know. I don't think so.
Maybe it was Max who did.
That sounds like it might be like a 15-hour ordeal.
Yeah, exactly. Because once he says it the first time, it's also true every subsequent step.
Right.
And so they just made this long cut of every single step he did throughout the entire rest of the thing.
Incredible.
He said that every time, and it was just like, Sam, I'm gonna kill you.
Casey, let's explain what we're doing here.
Oh, right.
This is our first trilogy of episodes in the Unseason. One of our favorite film trilogies is The Lord of the Rings. You and I are big fans of the books as well. And here we are to do our own trilogy modeled after The Lord of the Rings. And this being the first book of three. Each episode will be covering a tree that to us best represents that part of the story.
Yes.
For any given reason. Casey, the tree we're discussing today for this first book in our trilogy is the pedunculate oak, also known as the English oak, Quercus robur.
That is exactly right. Do you know what robur stands for?
Robust.
That's it. Strong.
Casey, I'm cheating a little bit because, spoiler alert.
What?
We talked about this tree in our winter solstice celebration 2021.
Oh my gosh. When was that? Where? What date is it now?
It was many, many years ago.
That was when the heroes roamed the land. Back when the mines were a mere mile deep.
Right. Yes. When the kingdoms of, whatever.
The kingdoms of men were young. Yes, Alex, you're right. There was. We did talk about it. It was the Oak King species we did for that.
Yes.
Now, I know what you're saying. Everyone's thinking, wait, you're doing this species again?
That wasn't what I was thinking.
Oh, I assume that we could hear the chorus of people complaining. It's like, hey, this week we're going to do a redux on this tree.
I was thinking, why wouldn't we do this for Return of the King?
Ah, oh my God.
The return of the Oak King.
Scratch it, Alex. Why didn't we think of this?
Maybe I shouldn't have said that. No, this is the better idea.
It is. I agree that this is the better idea for this reason. So we chose this tree because, A, in our solstice, we weren't talking about this tree in such a specific way. It was more of the intro to the kind of broader thing. This time, we're using this tree as a way bigger, deeper dive into this tree specifically, and then kind of how it grows and what it does, and then following that up with how we take care of these kinds of trees as they get gigantic and old. And of course, we chose it for the fellowship because in the Shire, before it is destroyed by the evil forces in the world, they have it's like just this rolling, meadowy land with these big, gigantic trees growing on top of these little houses and things like that.
Almost like the English countryside.
Exactly. That's what it like represents.
Yes.
And these trees are so representative of the English countryside that it would be just impossible for us not to use it.
Well, Casey, as we do every episode, let's imagine that you and I, hey, how about this? We've got some pipe weed.
Uh-huh.
We've got a tankard of beer, of ale.
Yeah, yep.
And we're just strolling through Hobbiton.
Yeah.
And
just chilling.
Everybody's so small. That's the first thing. I say this to you in hushed tones.
Yeah.
Say, Alex, you really can't say that.
You need to stop saying that.
And have you seen their feet?
They can hear you. They're not even wearing any shoes.
And we come across some beautiful pedunculate oaks.
That's right.
Are we going with pedunculate for this one? Or are we going with...
Yeah, I want to choose that because it also grows all over Europe. So saying it's the English oak is like anyone who's in England be like, yeah, it's just the oak tree. Anyone outside of that would call it something different. So here in the United States, easy. Let's call it the English oak. It makes sense for us. But it is a very widespread tree. You know, if you say the Oregon white oak, it grows most of its range in Oregon and California and Washington. So it's like, okay, fine. We named it after that place that existed. But then in other things like the American oak, okay, that makes sense. It's growing in what we call now America.
Right.
And, you know, so on and so forth, American whatever. So over there, it's like it could just as easily be called the European oak. But then there are so many European oaks where you have to give it a specific name. But this name is like, it would be like saying the Oregon white oak is the Portland oak.
I see.
It's like, well, it is, but it's also like a huge, huge, big range.
Well, it's also the Gary oak, Casey.
Exactly. So, no, it is never the Gary oak. It is the Gary oak. It isn't the Gary oak.
Well, any fucking way, we come across some pedunculate oaks.
Sorry, I asked, Casey.
I should know better. Sometimes there are certain things when I put a nickel in you, I make a little mental log. Don't bring that up again.
You know what it's going to be. Sorry.
We come across some pedunculate oaks on top of a hill with a door in it. How quaint.
How perfect.
Casey, let's ID this tree.
All right. First, it is a deciduous oak tree.
How
Alex.
Cool.
Very lovely. As an oak, of course, it's in the genus Quercus, which is a widespread genus of trees that has everything from evergreen shrubby things to gigantic evergreens and deciduous trees all across the ranges of latitude. Mexico, they actually have some of them, like so many of these species. So wide ranging. This one grows over in Europe. We're walking through this countryside. We see this gigantic, like elephantine tree.
Yeah.
It doesn't grow very tall. It doesn't grow very wide, but it just becomes like this big, massive, gnarly looking, like, what is that thing? Like, that's just a big, big, gigantic pile, like, of fallen lumber that has sprouts of oak leaves coming off.
Oh, does it still have like a defined crown?
It does, but like, it's a lot of times these old ones where if it's a younger tree, it kind of grows up and it has really kind of curvy, kind of branches similar to the Oregon white oak, but just a little bit different. And it grows upwards and outwards. As a young tree, it just is super spry, and it creates this very, very nice, like, circular crown, big oak circle globe. Like, what I imagine is like a perfect sphere, and you like a ball or something that's like a squishy kid's ball. And like push it flattened just a little bit.
Sure.
Now imagine if that was, you know, the size of a tree canopy and then placed on top of a big stem.
Yeah.
That's kind of what they look like. These flattened, big circle, oval kind of canopies.
Fantastic.
But the thing is, as they get older, they start to develop a way more irregular crown. So the younger ones, there's nice little globes. Everything's looking really good. Just like everything else that gets old, people, animals, trees, everything, it starts to get, you know, a decay pocket over here. This branch breaks. You know, it regrows over here. This part dies and then gets recolonized that space by some other branch. Mm. So you get this crown that starts to develop this really irregular habit and shape.
Cool.
So that's from afar. You're walking into it, though, and you will see a gorgeous, beautiful little oak leaf, like the quintessential oak leaf.
Yes, lobed, eh?
It is. It is lobed as an oak, which is a pinnately compound or pinnately lobed and veined. I always want to say compound after I say pinnate.
Right.
I don't mean it.
Good catching yourself.
Thank you, Alex. On the top, it's like a bluish kind of green tinge to it. Mm. It actually, it doesn't really jump out as like dark green. It's kind of a light bluish green a lot of times, especially when you get closer. From far away, it has this very like almost a cloudy blue, or I'm sorry, a cloudy green kind of color.
Mm.
And you walk up close, you look at these leaves, and they're in the white oak family, so their lobes are rounded.
Yes.
And they have almost no petiole to speak of. It's very, very small. It's technically there, but it's really small.
This is a good ID thing, Casey, that yeah. I really enjoy.
Uh-huh.
White oak versus red oak families.
Yes.
White oak family, oaks? Mm-hmm.
Subfamily, I should add.
Oh, okay.
They're all Quercus, technically.
Okay.
Well, yeah, genus.
Subgenus.
Yeah.
White oak, subgenus, rounded lobes
uh-huh.
on these oak leaves.
That's right.
Red oak, subgenus, pointed lobes.
Exactly.
Which, can you call
tips.
Them a lobe?
Yeah, they're still lobes. They're okay. They call them bristle tipped. So they're lobed, but they're just sharp lobes.
Bristle tip.
Yeah, that's right. The little bit, because there's like a little tiny hairish looking thing on the end.
Interesting.
But really, that's just the two edges coming up and coming together.
Cool. Well, there you go. So yeah, if you're ever trying
that's
to...
That's perfect.
It's a good place to start with your oaks.
That is a great place to start. That's perfect. The other thing to note is they're going to be alternately arranged down the stem,
okay.
these oaks. But the other thing about oaks specifically is that as they are growing, their shoot is elongating. They put buds on, alternately arranged down that stem.
Mm-hmm.
But as the growth rate slows of that shoot elongation, it still puts it out almost at the same time. But because the growth is shorter, they appear closer together. So at the end of that shoot elongation, then you get all these buds that are like really, really tightly clustered at the end of that twig.
And oh, that's yeah, I've
a
seen
classic
this.
Oak thing. Yeah, yeah. You have.
So when it grows outward, it just takes a couple of those buds with it and grows new ones?
It kind of does. Well, what it does is as it grows out, think about the way I imagine it is that it's going to put out a bud at the same like rate. 1, 2, 3, mm-hmm. 4, 5. And it's like, I'm going to put 10 buds out. If it grows really slow, then basically it's like, grow out as much as you can. I'm going to put a bud at the same time signature, the same rate. But if you grow slower, then that rate is going to end up being a little bit closer together.
Okay.
So this is how I imagine it. So as it's growing really fast, it like does 1, does 2, does 3, and it has like, you know, an inch or so between each bud.
Mm-hmm.
But then as it slows down, it's still growing, but it's way slower, but you still have now 4, 5, 6.
So they'll be closer together.
Be way closer together, okay. Exactly. So at the end of it, when it's just like, okay, we have 4 more buds, and it's just like, blah, 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 and they're just right on top of each other, clustered at the very end of
that
twig.
Got it, okay.
So that's how they grow, and at the end of the twig, it makes you think they're oppositely arranged,
mm-hmm.
but they are not. They're just jam-packed right next to each other, so that the alternation is almost inconceivable.
It's arbitrary, huh?
It's completely arbitrary, Alex.
Hey, that's the name of the show.
But the other thing with these leaves, they don't have any little, the tiny little petiole, which again is the part that connects the leaf to the stem of the plant.
Right.
Tiny, tiny petiole, and it has a little lobe ear coming off on the very base. So where usually you have that petiole comes up, and then the leaf blade comes from there up and out. Instead, for these, the lobe first like goes down and then goes up and out to the rest of it. So it looks like it has these two literal like little lobes that are going downwards that look like little earlobes at the base of the leaf.
Interesting.
And that is a great ID characteristic for this tree specifically.
Yeah. Well, speaking of ID characteristics, Casey. Let's talk this pedunculate bark.
Ah, blech, utility bark.
Oh no.
It is. It's not bad though. It still has like this, like it's the oak looking effect where oak bark looks like alligator bark. Like it's just gorgeous and it has these, it doesn't get very thick. It doesn't get very furrowed, but it develops these little cracks in it that go both vertically and kind of split apart. But it also develops, like half of them develop these cracks in the vertical or the horizontal plane. I'm not sure if I'm explaining it.
Right. How about this? Google a photo with that. Because Casey, I think the reason you're having trouble explaining it is because there's nothing to explain.
It's hard to explain.
It's just bark. It's just like bark looking bark.
It just cracks.
Yeah.
It doesn't peel. It doesn't pop. It just is. It's bark that grows up and starts to get a little aged.
Yeah.
That's it.
It's like trying to describe the color white. Like yeah. Not a color, but it's all colors.
If just Google white.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that is it. It's utility bark. It's very nice and hard. And the wood, of course, is an oak. So everything in it is also really hard.
Wood.
It's a hardwood tree. And it's just one of those trees that you see it grow and you're like, okay, yeah, it was normal. Nothing to it.
Yeah.
It's gray.
That's too bad.
Yeah. Middle between white and black.
Well, Casey, we have plenty more.
We do have plenty more.
To say about this pedunculate oak.
Oh, I should add one thing.
Oh, please do.
The reason it's called...
I thought there was something missing.
It has acorns.
Oh, acorns. Casey, I can't believe I forgot about the acorns.
Now, do you know why it's called the pedunculate oak?
Well, no.
Well, the peduncle is the part that connects a fruit or a flower, the infrutescence for a fruit, or the inflorescence, which is the collection of flowers or the collection of fruit. It is the stem that connects that. So you have the petiole,
right,
which connects the leaf blade to the stem. The peduncle connects the plant or the fruit to the fruit or the flower to the stem.
I'm sure those words are related etymologically, no?
They absolutely are, yeah.
Okay, what is that root? P-E-D, ped?
You know what? I don't know exactly what the root is.
Okay.
That's a good question. But I know they're related. It's just one, the peduncle for the fruit and the petiole for the flower. So it's P-E-T,
P-E-T.
For the petiole, but then peduncle, P-E-D. So I don't know. I would assume they are. My brain assumed that they were.
Yeah.
Just because they sound so similar. Well, as it happens, the oak acorns of this little guy, they have a little pedestal or a little peduncle, so that's why they call it the pedunculate oak.
Okay,
because the acorns have a little stem on them.
Yeah, if I recall, we talked about on our winter solstice celebration the ratio of acorn matter to cap matter.
Yes, yeah, that's right. Yeah,
and how this one was a lot of cap.
Yeah, it's a lot of cap. I'm sorry. There's not a lot of cap. It's a big long acorn with just a little kind of bit of a cap.
Okay, opposite.
Yes,
it's a lot of acorn.
It's a lot of acorn with a medium sized hat.
It's tip heavy.
Yes, exactly. There's some that it looks like the whole thing is enveloped in the cap, and some it looks like the cap is like a little French beret sitting like on the very crown of a head.
Right.
Yeah, this is somewhere in the middle. Either way, that's how you identify it. It's growing all over Europe. It's the French barrels. French oak is many times the same species.
Oh, okay.
Where they would like, oh, this wine was aged in French oak. And it's like, oh, well, it was probably the pedunculate oak, Quercus rober.
Interesting. It's sort of a internationally claimed.
Exactly. And that's
everybody calls it their thing.
That's why I'm trying to make it as broad as possible.
I love that, Casey.
So we'll see how it lands.
Well, Casey, speaking of landing, an advertisement's about to land in your ears. We'll be right back after this short break. Lord of the Tree Rings month. Casey.
Hi, Alex.
You know something about me?
I do.
And you do know this, that I love to be cozy.
Yes, that is very true. Unfortunately, I have to get you out of your bed to do work. Because our studio here is small.
Yeah, Casey physically drags me out of bed every morning. And you know what?
Slap a pair of headphones on.
And you know what I'm sleeping on, Casey?
What are you sleeping on today, Alex?
My brand new Cozy Earth bedding.
Oh, Alex, I heard about this.
And you know what I'm sleeping in?
What?
My brand new Cozy Earth jogger set.
Ooh, hold on. Let me get a feel of that. Not your sheet. I'm getting my own sheet.
That's right.
Ooh, this is smooth.
Casey is wrapped in his new Cozy Earth bedding. Now, Casey just returned from Italy.
Just got back.
Land of soft fabrics.
Exactly.
And he has waiting for him products from our brand new sponsor, Cozy Earth. Casey, what do you think?
This is incredible. I don't think I've ever felt something so soft and so, like, I don't know. It feels silky and smooth and it looks beautiful.
It's true, Casey. And you know what? I have been sleeping in my Cozy Earth clothing.
Well, Alex, have you noticed anything about your sleep?
I have been sleeping so well. And here are some things I love about sleeping in my Cozy Earth bedding and my Cozy Earth clothes.
Yeah.
This is no longer officially an ad. This is just me talking.
Hey, let everyone just come on in. Just come on in here.
Casey, it is temperature regulating, so I no longer have any problems with getting too warm, getting too cool, having to get up and shut the window, having to get up and open the window, turn the heat on, turn the heat off. I sleep through the night. Soon I'll be eating solid foods, and I have such a good time doing it. Casey, I know you've been traveling, you've been flying, you've been not sleeping in your own bed. I cannot tell you how excited I am for you to try this brand new Cozy Earth bedding.
I cannot tell you how much I agree. Just feeling it, I'm essentially swaddled in a sheet right now, Alex.
That's right,
and
you are.
And I cannot tell you how excited. I'm going to wash this. I'm going to throw it on my bed today.
Hell yeah.
So if you want to be as cozy as Alex and I, then go to CozyEarth.com and after you purchase, enter the promo code TREES, T-R-E-E-S, to get 35% off. That's huge.
And Casey, how about this? All of Cozy Earth's products come with a 100-night sleep trial and a 10-year warranty. I don't have that kind of warranty on my tires.
I don't have that kind of warranty on anything.
So go to CozyEarth.com and use promo code TREES for 35% off. Now go and go and get cozy.
Yeah, you go get cozy now.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. Hi, everybody. It's Alex here. And you know what? Come springtime, those trees are a-blooming. Those people are a-walking around. That sun is a-shining. And it makes me so grateful for my social life. People are wanting to do things again. And it can be extremely rewarding to start to see friends more often and, you know, go on cute friend dates or romantical dates, sit on a patio and drink a coffee, ooh la la. But it's really easy to overdo it. And for me, it's very important to keep an eye on my social battery. Every time I go on a social outing, I come home and I'm like, wow, I am really tired in a very specific way. Well, that's my battery. That's my social battery being drained. And I didn't really have this language until I started going to therapy. I didn't know why being around people made me so exhausted, even though I love those people and enjoy being around them. But therapy helped me with my self-awareness and helped me unlock some language that I didn't otherwise have. And if you are struggling with feelings and thoughts that you don't understand, therapy can be a great way to unlock the power of understanding. And a great way to start is BetterHelp. It's completely online and it's designed to be super convenient and flexible, which is very important. How many times have you had a therapy session on the calendar and that time rolls around and you think, I gotta drive all the way across town. I am not gonna go. It has, of course, happened to me. I'm sure it's happened to everybody who's been in therapy. No worries with BetterHelp. It's all online. And all you have to do is fill out a brief questionnaire. You get matched with a licensed therapist, of course. And nobody nails it on their first time. It's like going on dates. You gotta find the right therapist for you. It's silly to think that the very first date you ever go on is going to be your future spouse. So you can switch therapists at any time, no additional charge. It's extremely easy. So find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/trees today to get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/trees. Happy spring! Welcome back, friends and fungal associates, to Completely Arbitrary. Today we're talking the pedunculate oak. also sometimes known as the French oak, also sometimes known as the English oak, probably known as the German oak at some in some places.
Yeah, also probably known as the Polish oak and the Norwegian oak. Yeah. Most likely the Swedes also have a claim on that.
Sure.
Anyway.
This is an international tree of mystery.
It sure is. I will.
Casey, we forgot to mention something up top.
Yeah, which is extremely important and why we're like, we took a break and we were both like, okay, off to a good start.
Yes, and the good start we're talking about is we are, much in the way that Peter Jackson and et al. Yep. Created those films, the Lord of the Rings films, basically all at once.
Yeah,
in a marathon production style. You and I are doing a marathon production today. We are recording all three of these episodes back to back to back.
To back.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're doing it. We're also like diligently going to be eating and drinking, you know, to make sure that we don't die. We have some Lamb's bread to make sure that we can continue forward.
That's right.
So we're going to be okay, but that's a critical part of this entire adventure we're about to go on.
Yes, and we forgot to mention it, which is fine.
Yeah, and well, I mean, you know, you sit down to listen to something, and you sit down to start walking, you realize, oh my God, we have to walk so much further.
Yeah,
that's what it's going to be like.
So this is also, you know, in the way that many people believe that the only way to watch Lord of the Rings is in a marathon.
Exactly.
Really, the only way to listen to these episodes is in a 6-hour marathon.
Yeah. So stop now. Put a pause in it, wait 3 weeks, and then listen to the whole episode, yeah. All three of them straight in a row.
Casey, no, we need the ad revenue.
You're right. Sorry. Everyone, please keep listening.
Casey.
Alex Croson.
We have more to say about the pedunculate oaks, specifically about European tree care.
That is correct.
Or ETC, as
that's,
we call
yeah,
it.
Yeah, we're going to call it ETC for short. Now, I will say that this is an idea of... European tree care, it's all lowercase letters. There is no official European tree care.
Sure.
There is a...
LLC.
Exactly, yeah. Don't hold our feet to that fire. Mm. But the reason that I call it that is because I, of course, I'm an arborist. I'm based in the United States. I'm in North America. And we take a different approach to taking care of our trees or managing them is it like a cultural thing than people in Europe and more broadly people across the entire world, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because of like some very specific things we'll kind of get into. And this is my own idea that I've been kind of putting together, but I've seen the evidence and I think I can say this as one who has studied trees for a while and talked about them every now and then. I think I'm going to hold this as a trend.
That the Europeans are better at tree care?
They're different in a very specific way. That way being, they are more inclined to keep big old trees in whatever possible means they can.
Okay.
To honor those trees. Whereas in the United States, we see a tree and we're like, if that tree is going to maybe fall... we're going to cut it down and plant a new tree.
Right.
Because, A, we're a much more litigious group where if something happens, someone's going to sue someone else
for
it.
Oh, sure.
But also, we don't cherish trees and ancient trees and things like that near as much as other places do.
I would say, you know, zoom out a notch. And we don't respect or cherish old things and or people in the same way that Europe does or... almost anywhere else in the world.
Yeah, exactly.
We have kind of an anti-old policy here in the U.S.
Yeah, it's a very strange thing. And I like I said, I didn't do any research on this in the sense of like, is there a difference in this? Like, it's really hard to parse out. I mean, these are like weird cultural things.
Mm-hmm.
But I have some ideas as to why this is, and we'll talk about those, and we'll talk about what exactly it is I mean by these, what the differences are.
Okay.
But you're exactly right. I think in the United States, we don't see trees and we don't see old things as something to like honor and venerate and like keep around just for the sake of those things. It's kind of like it's just a different interaction. We see an old tree and we're like, oh, it's an old tree, whatever, move on.
It's a financial liability.
Exactly. Other people see it as like, no, that tree's been there for hundreds of years. Just like, we're not going to get rid of it. What? And they don't even have a conception. I've met other people who a lot of the things, the way that Americans do things, that are people from the United States more specifically, is just like, they're like, wait, you have food banks? Why do you need a food bank?
Right.
And they don't even get why. It's like, oh, well, because we have these certain populations that don't feed them. Like, what? And it, like, the concept doesn't even register because it doesn't make any sense, because in their cultures and their societies, there are certain safety nets, like, it's just, it doesn't happen. Like, it's not a problem.
Yeah.
So it's one of those things where you have to kind of go someplace to learn about it or talk to these other people to see the differences or to see that there is another way. That is what happened. I've been over to Europe a few times. I plan to go back. I've been to Japan, and I've been down to South America. I've seen the way that things are taken care of and the way that they interact with their trees in all these different places. And these are, you know, like I said, I'm not well-traveled. I'm also not well-studied, but I can definitely say that you can see differences in each one just by going into the streets and looking around in the cities and be like, okay, what's going on here? Do they have trees? Do they not have trees? How do they take care of them? And really quickly, you can start to see trends.
Well, let's talk about some European care trends.
Let's talk about those trends. So, Alex, real quick, I want you to go into our informational sheet, and I want you to click on the major oak.
Okay, one moment.
Thank you. What's fun is that we're going into thesherwoodforest.com.
Wow.
And this is the first hint about what is different about these kinds of European tree cares. So if you, all of you at home playing the home game, please go to Sherwood Forest, or rather, I'm sorry, look up the major oak, and you can go to visitsherwood.co.uk.
/explore-the-forest/the-major-oak/.
That's it. Thank you, Alex. Without you, we would be nowhere.
I see the major oak here. Probably the most famous resident of Sherwood Forest after Robin Hood, of course. The iconic major oak is an ancient giant that absolutely cannot be missed.
Yeah. Now scroll down to the second group of photos there and give us a quick description.
Well, I see a large oak tree in probably the summertime. Mm-hmm. This photo was taken.
Yeah.
And it's got some, it's Casey. It's got a broken leg. It's walking on crutches.
It's got a lot of crutches.
It's got one, two, three. I can count six.
Yeah, it looks like six or seven, maybe.
Yeah, crutches. Mm-hmm. And then we have a photo of it in the wintertime. Same crutches.
Yep, same crutches. And there's also like guy wires holding those crutches in place.
Oh, yes, I see that too.
And there also, it's hard to see on the photo on the left, but there's another guy wire that's inside the tree. There's two of them that you can see on the top left of that photo going up to the right.
I see that. So they kind of turned this tree into like a living building to keep it. They built a foundation around it.
Exactly. Now, I'm going to flip through. This is another book that you and I have frequented often.
So many visuals today.
Yeah, oh, it's so great. This is the best. I wish I had actually, I looked through this yesterday to get it, and I decided, or to like find what I was looking for. Uh-huh. And I was like, there's so many. I don't need a bookmark. And now I'm like, I should have bookmarked
these. And Casey, what is this book?
This book is Remarkable Trees of the World by Thomas Pakenham.
There you go.
Which I believe you can find on our website or on any local bookstore you would like. But what Thomas has done is he's gone around and looked at trees across the world and has found some interesting trees, like the biggest ones. They're obviously remarkable per the name.
I see.
But he talks about a little bit about the culture and what they are, and he splits this up into like gods and dwarfs and all these things. Like, it's very like Lord of the Rings themed kind of book.
Sweet.
And so this one, he always has like some really cool old picture and talks about the people and how they use this tree. So this is a tree from Italy. And notice there's a gigantic bar holding this leaning tree up.
Yes, the whole tree is leaning, and then there's just a big
it's just like, yeah,
a big diagonal, somebody just put a flagpole up against it to keep it from falling.
Exactly.
Over.
It looks like it's a almost like a pillar like leaning against it. It's the St. Francis's Cypress at Verrincio, northern Italy, and it's about 800 years old.
That's an old one.
800 years old. Now, we're going to flip through here really fast. We're going to go to another one. Here's another big oak tree. This is the Femme Aiche at Aral, Westphalia.
Okay.
Now,
wow.
Can you see Alex on that?
It looks like an oak tree.
Yep. It's huge, clearly.
Yeah,
like,
I mean,
there's a knuckle kind of leaning, you know?
The photo is kind of dark. I can't really tell what's happening.
I'll show you here. So this is a bunch of 2x4s, like giant 4x4 bits of wood holding up a leaning section of this tree.
Yeah.
Down here is a little tiny one where there's this massive like elbow of a branch that's leaning out, and then you have to like just put a little branch underneath it or else it's just going to hit the ground, you know? So there's another example. So this is another old oak. I think Westphalia is in Germany, I think, Bavaria.
And Casey, are those structures called crutches?
No, they're called braces. That's just what they call it.
Good name. Casey's getting up. Casey has handed me the Remarkable Trees book, and I'm looking at the page Parsifal and the Holy Grail.
Take a look at that tree real fast, Alex.
The tree's big.
Yeah,
Casey.
And I will send photos of this, but this book captures the photos of this tree in the best possible way. So all I can say is go get this book and read through it. It's a wonderful book. But it's hard to like capture what these trees look like just by words.
Can I try?
Can you try, please?
So this is a large oak tree.
Mm-hmm.
The trunk is one of those trunks that looks like a wedding gown. Just a huge kind of like...
That's such a good example.
It's very, very wide and floofy.
And like almost completely hollow.
It's completely... You can walk into this tree. And it has like bands of bark reaching the floor that are not attached to anything else.
Yeah.
On one side of the tree here, it has, I would say, probably a dozen braces holding up various limbs. It's a scene, man.
It is a scene. Like, it is a crazy... And if you just keep flipping backwards in this book, you'll see a few more examples. But essentially, what this is showing and what this is covering are ancient trees in... Specifically, this is all over the world, but these ones that we just looked at are all European trees. Most of them are giant old oak trees. Now, there's a few, and there's another one called the Cadiz lime, which is in Germany. And that's another example of a big old tree, a lime. We call it a basswood or a linden tree,
Tilia.
And those trees were super important in Germany because they were like the tree for beer gardens for hundreds and hundreds of years.
Oh.
So
to decorate a beer garden?
Yeah, like they would be planted in and around and like shade the beer garden.
They would
plant lime trees.
Okay.
And this, I remember I had a client years ago in Seattle who was trying to figure out what this tree was. He didn't know the name of the tree in English, but he was like, I want to know if I could plant one here. And he was this old German guy who came over to Seattle and got a really good job and had lived there and kind of retired out to this, you know, larger property outside the city. And he just wanted his tree taken a look at. And he was like, now, I wonder if you'll know. And so we just started chatting. He started to describe it. He was like, oh, it's these trees that were over the beer garden, said it in German, and then it sounded very similar to lime in English. I'm like, I know exactly which tree that is. And then a quick look at it and then showed him my phone. He was like, that is the tree.
Wow.
And I was like, hey, sweet. This is wonderful, like, that we can find this. But even this person who's this expatriate moved over here is still like all about this one specific kind of tree.
Hmm.
So in Europe, there is a history that is a congruent history for the last several thousand years, where there is no, there was no like gigantic change of cultures that ever happened. So maybe the Romans versus the Celts and the Germanic tribes, you know, in Julius Caesar's time, like just before the, you know, the zero mark on our calendars.
Uh-huh.
However, those cultures were still relatively the same. You know, they were still somehow the same kind of people, and they've been culturally meshing and mingling for thousands of years.
Mm-hmm.
So when the Romans became essentially, they signed away their places to become their own little cities, and you get France, and you get Germanic areas, and you get all these like individual nations that start to develop over the next, you know, several hundred years. All those cultures slowly shifted and became, but were also basically the same the whole time. They just slowly moved. And those people, they would be a sacred place. A yew tree, for example, is growing around a sacred druid space.
Mm-hmm.
That druid space then became sacred to the Christians when that cultural shift happened. It wasn't a cultural, like, bagouge. It was usually like, hey, I guess we're Christian now. We're not going to destroy this place, but we're going to make you have our religion. Sorry, we're the new Romans, and we're going to keep your space, but now it's a Christian space. And everyone's like, okay, I guess. And they weren't really persecuted. It just kind of made that transition. Doesn't matter at this point if it was like what was happening. Imagine there's this tree here that was sacred, and everyone has decided that's a sacred tree.
Yeah.
That tree 2,000 years later is still sacred, and everyone's like, I still want that tree to be taken care of. Now, there are oak trees, like the major oak, which is a tree that was just growing out in the middle of Sherwood Forest, which is the hunting grounds for the king and the monarchy at the time, right? And they decided that, like, wow, this is allegedly where Robin Hood and his merry men would make camp. The major oak was where they would go and meet up.
Right.
That's the whole lore behind it. So, wow. Like, we got to save this tree. This tree is, like, super unique and cool. Then they had all these other oak trees and these big old estates and all these things that were geriatric and falling apart. And instead of saying, well, this tree's decayed, it's clearly on its last leg, we're going to have to remove it because we don't want it to fall on someone. The European idea is like, well, no, at all costs, we want to save this tree. And so then they put these braces up and they cable it and they put a chain around it. There's a picture in that book where they take a literal metal band and put it around a tree like a belt to like hold it from falling and like literally just disintegrating. Not good for the tree ultimately, but
yeah,
if you put one on and then you let it grow a little bit, then you stick another one on, like you can manage that. It's just heavily managed. The only reason these trees still exist is because humans have come in and augmented their existence to make sure that it can last as long as possible.
This is interesting philosophically because I start to think, you know, like you look at this sort of like tree preservation.
Yeah.
And your instinct is to say, oh, that's great. That's a good thing.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
But if the tree is ready to die, if the tree has reached the end of its, you know, ability to hold itself up and needs to fall apart.
Yeah.
Is it good to put it on life support with machinery and equipment and hardware?
That is a very good question, Alex. Now, two things. One, we have to be careful not to anthropomorphize too much because a tree that's on its last leg, a tree will always be alive and wanting to live no matter what. So if there is a connection between leaves, the bark, and the ground, that tree is going to continue on because the cells that are on the outside are still brand new. Nothing of those cells are like really old. We're like, oh, your skin's lost its, you know, stuff. And obviously your cells are always, you know, transforming and becoming new and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. But
like your brain ages, and aging process in humans and other animals is completely different than the aging process in trees, where just that outside is alive and kicking. So if just that outside is alive and kicking, tree's good.
Fair enough.
But they do have to deal with these things. But your question is still philosophically very accurate. If the tree is about to be falling apart, why should we put it on life support instead of just letting the tree die and planting a new tree? A lot of times they would take a little twig of that tree and they would grow that with new roots and then plant that in the stead.
Or also, go ahead.
Oh, no, that was it.
Also, you know, that old tree, if it's in a natural area like the Sherwood Forest, that old tree like falling apart and dying, it gives back to the landscape. It's
going
to become a nurse log, and it's going to house a bunch of animals and fungus and stuff.
That's exactly right. In fact, it probably already does that in a lot of ways.
Oh, sure, yeah.
But then you also bring up a good point. If it's in a forest, it's not going to attack, it's not going to hurt anything if it falls down. So whenever you're doing a risk assessment in trees, you have to, in order for something to be considered a risk or to have risk, there has to be a target for it to hit and a likelihood that it will in fact hit that target.
Yeah.
So a tree in the middle of the forest has no target. There's nothing that it's going to slam into.
Right.
So there's no risk associated with it.
Well, here's a question, Casey, another philosophical one.
Let's go.
If that tree in the middle of the forest falls over, does it make a sound?
Okay, thanks, Alex. Way to ruin everything good about this show. Anyway, so the other philosophical question, the other thing that comes to me is that with the United States specifically, the cultural congruency does not exist. Where 500 or 2,000 years ago, the people that were living in this place, they maybe didn't have the tools that they needed to, like, you know, cut down a million trees all the time. It was a whole bunch of work. It wasn't chainsaws, right? But
we can still
do it. People with axes and saws, they did a very good job of deforesting the entire, you know, United States or the Eastern United States. So we don't need to do it. It's just a lot of work. So it takes a lot of people, a lot of calories. But what is different between there and here is that cultural change over time that happened in Europe was essentially the same kinds of people. One of my favorite podcasts, Hardcore History, always discusses this, where you can't like compare different armies of different times because the technology is completely different.
Of course, yeah.
These people and their technologies, whether they were Romans or Celts or anyone, their technologies were essentially the same.
Sure.
Everyone had a sword, everyone had a spear, an arrow, things like that. Mm-hmm. And so when you're doing these big transformations, maybe one speaks a different language, they have a different, you know, cultural traditions and things like that, but for all intents and purposes, they were living the same kind of agrarian lives. Whereas we come over to the United States,
right,
500 years ago, there was a cultural shift that was massive. Like, proportionally speaking, like it was just completely different. It was full stop, full start, two different things.
Yes.
So that, when those people, the initial colonists, were coming over here, they came here for certain like ideological reasons, but it was also free resources.
Mm-hmm.
I have now land that I can grow my crops on, but in order to do that, I have to cut down these trees. But great, I have all these gigantic trees to cut down and I can ship them across. So you had, the United States was essentially the same as the moon or an asteroid, where it's like, no, those are resources we are trying to get.
Right.
There's no cultural significance to these resources.
To us,
as we come over and take all these trees down. Now, the people that were here before, they were just the same as those other base cultures where they were living agrarian, you know, lifestyles where the land and them, they were one unit.
Yeah.
So as soon as we came over and started destroying all these things, you get this shift where now instead of having these ancient trees that you revered because they were important to you, for whatever reason, now you have this thing where it's like, great, there's a big gigantic tree. This saw and these axes are going to take that down, and I'm going to have a huge mast for my ship. I'm going to have wood to burn this thing. And we just treated them as a resource,
yeah,
specifically. Culturally, we had almost no connection to them until things started happening in our culture that made them important. So the Charter Oak, which is the oak that's on the corridor for Connecticut, I think.
Interesting.
That is where like the Charter of the United States or something was like hidden in a hole in the oak tree when the British were coming, you know? All of a sudden, that oak tree had a big importance to us.
Mm.
And other bits and trees, like there's some old trees planted by, you know, this tree was planted by this person here, and it's like a really important tree.
Yeah.
And they were like, okay, we got to take care of that tree. We don't want that tree to die. So it's a really curious kind of like cultural shift, not to mention the United States, as I said before, everything has in a modern day been shifted over to let's minimize our liability. And instead of just saying, hey, there's this old tree, it might fall apart at any time. Everyone loves this tree though, because it's an important tree. Period. In and of itself, it's intrinsically important. Usually that's not the case. Usually it's important because of, you know, this other thing that's related to us. So you end up finding this like this very subtle cultural difference. I mean, well, it's not very subtle, honestly.
I don't think it's subtle at all.
Yeah, it's subtle if you look at it from the top down, but if you look at it from the side and you see where it came from, you see the basis of it,
yeah,
it's like, oh geez, yeah, that's, those are two different things.
Yeah.
And so when you are looking at how we're going to retain these old trees. And this goes back to the peduncular oak, because this is the like quintessential old tree in Europe that they're doing this for. It, you know, there's lime trees, there's maybe a London plane out there, there's yews, certainly yews. I think I found a list of like the seven biggest trees in, or oldest trees in Britain. Like two were oaks and three were yews.
Wow.
That kind of thing. So it's a situation, and in that book, in Remarkable Trees of the World, same thing. You're finding this all the time. But this tree, specifically, it decays in the middle. As trees grow, they're always going to be putting themselves, growing and responding to different things. This tree, for whatever reason, can almost completely fall apart but stay alive. So if we can just like keep it from falling apart and like not let it completely crash to the ground, it stays alive. And so you end up getting these big, old, iconic trees that happen to already live forever, but also take these things really well. We're like, oh, well, let's just cable it. It's got solid wood. We can do that. And if the wood starts to decay, it's still strong enough to where it can decay quite a bit before it physically rips itself off.
Yeah.
So as the tree and the people like grew up together, like one of those, the major oak, I think they, it was, There's another one that I found too, but the major oak, like 1,200 years, or year 1,200 is when it like started to plant or grow. So it's one of those. It's one of those things where they just they see it differently, and they've been experienced with it so much. Was like that tree means something. So, in terms of how the tree works, there's another like little bit to add on to it. We talked about that band around the tree, or like geriatrically holding a tree up, and in modern arboriculture, people would say, you have to let the tree hold itself up. So prune it and do things to it so that the tree is strong enough to do its own thing. Whereas if you put one of those braces like we've seen on a bunch of these branches, that tree is now no longer holding up that branch from its connection point to the tree trunk. It is holding itself up from wherever that brace is, and the strain that's initially on the connection to the tree trunk is now reduced to the point where it almost doesn't exist. Then, where let's say we'll use what I'm doing right now as an example.
Yeah, Casey's extending his arm in sort of a last poor Yorick.
Yeah. So my arm is a branch. My torso is the trunk. My shoulder is where this branch, my arm, connects to the trunk. So if I am trying to hold something up, like just put a big bowling ball in my hand, all the strain for how I'm lifting that goes back to my elbow, or I'm sorry, my
shoulder. Yes.
So if I then put a brace underneath my elbow, then my shoulder is now no longer holding that burden up.
But,
now it's my elbow.
Yes.
So I'm still doing that, which is great because now it's like a little bit shorter of a lever arm. I'm a little bit stronger there because I'm not trying to hold up my entire arm. So you get these advantages, but if you let me hold that for the next, you know, several weeks and days and months and years,
eventually you'll need another one, another brace under your hand.
Yeah, exactly, right? But also, I'm not going to develop any muscles in my upper arm because it's not doing almost any of the work. It's doing a little bit of work, so it's going to get a little bit stronger.
So we've talked about trees growing wood in certain places to create leverage and strength. Mm-hmm. So when we're propping up a tree's limb, a branch like that, does it like, you know, physiologically go, oh, I don't need to worry about what is that called? Growing wood.
Yeah, it doesn't
area.
Have to reinforce.
Right, reinforce. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's exactly right.
It gets weak.
It doesn't lose any of its strength, but it doesn't continue to build strength that it would need if that brace was, say, removed.
Wow.
So what you end up getting is the tree's physiological response. It would put on a whole bunch of wood from the elbow out because it's still that is still dealing with strain and stimulus and things like that.
Right.
But it would put on way less wood on the upper arm because it's like, wow, there's no strain there, so it must be doing just fine. So you end up getting these trees that have these really, that you essentially, as soon as you augment a tree's support system, whether it's by cable or bracing, whether it's by putting a brace underneath the arms, or the limbs, then you're changing how that tree functions as a whole unit. So as soon as you change how that tree is functioning as a whole unit, then now if you take away those things, those man-made objects, the tree's unable to hold itself up.
That's very interesting. I mean, there's a lot of questions you have to ask yourself as like, I guess like as a human in this relationship between human and tree.
Yeah.
Like how much help, you know, the more help you give the tree, the more help it needs.
Yes. Yeah.
So exactly like, at what point do you look at a tree and say, oh, it's mostly metal at this point.
Yeah.
And 2x4s.
It's the Darth Vader of trees. Now we're really crossing worlds here.
Yes.
That's the last philosophical question that you get from like hardcore arborists. They would be like, no, that tree has to do almost everything itself.
Yeah.
But it's like, well, if we just do this one thing, it reduces the likelihood that it's going to rip itself apart. And then, but you just kind of keep going and keep going until it's like, yeah, we take care of this tree because we have to. If we don't, it will literally rip itself apart anytime.
Which is fine. I have no problem with that. I'm certainly not saying, well, where do you draw the line? You know, but it is something to think about. It's an interesting thing to think about. Like
it is,
the resources you're putting into this tree.
Precisely.
And then the more resources you put into the tree, the more it needs. And so you have to put more resources into it. And they're not my resources, so I don't care. But that's kind of a fascinating, like, you know, how many babies fit in the tire kind of thing.
Yeah, I have no idea what that's referencing to.
Somebody will get that and we'll love it.
Okay. Well, Alex, that is the big question. And I think for my part, where I stand on it, is we don't necessarily need to keep every single tree that is old and big for its intrinsic value. I think we can also let some of them just, you know, turn to dust as time happens, because that's what everything does. Okay.
Yeah.
But I do think that the route the United States has taken, and more specifically kind of North America above Mexico, because it's kind of another very strict kind of cultural unity there. Like Canada and the United States, we have our differences, but for all intents and purposes, we're the same kind of place.
Yes.
Mexico has way different interactions with its people and its trees. It's a completely different kind of situation.
Yeah.
But as it happens, I think that the way that we manage our trees, we should be more inclined to not take the hardcore arborist stance and say, yes, I want this tree to survive and I don't want this gigantic branch to rip off because this tree's important. An arboretum's a great example. We want those trees to be there for as long as possible.
That, I'm on board with that for sure. Yeah.
So it's like, let's keep this around. Like, is it a street tree that is, you know, if it does fall, it could very likely hit a person who's walking or driving or something. It's like, okay, that risk threshold is a little bit higher. But also, if it's in a park, could we not just say, hey, we're going to put a little fence around this tree?
Yeah.
So if something does happen, we put a fence and said, hey, just so you know, this is, and I mean like a fence that's like a foot and a 2 feet tall, like something you could easily walk under and go like touch the tree. It's like, we don't care if you do that. But if we put something around it that just says, hey, we are acknowledging this tree is old and geriatric. It might fall apart at any point.
Right.
It hasn't yet. It looks really good. It's a historic tree because it was planted by blah, 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 whatever. That, I think, is a perfectly reasonable way to do it. Or keep it from falling apart. Put a little thing in there. If someone fucks around with it, we can just be like, oh, okay, someone fucked around with it. Now we have to remove the tree. Everyone's going to be upset, because that tree was important. And if they don't do it, and it does hurt someone, we can say, well, we put stuff on there. There was a sign. Like, there's a fence. Like, you put yourself in danger for this. We're sorry. It was an awful thing that happened. Or it's like, hey, we're sorry that your fence got crushed, but it's a fence. Who cares? We can rebuild another fence. Like, this tree is massively old and really interesting and really cool in and of itself. So I think that there's a good middle ground where I think, if it's take the tree down or cut it to pieces so that it doesn't fall over, why don't we take the third option of like basically constructing its crutch system and letting it live for another 40 years?
Man, there's something really, and I'm not an anthropologist. I don't know if you know this about me. I'm not an anthropologist.
That's the only reason I asked you to be a part of this. You brought that to the table.
Although I am just endlessly fascinated by like cultures and how humans in different places interact with different things.
Yeah.
There is something quite profound about, American tree culture, like old tree culture.
Yeah.
And how that reflects like the origins of the company. Country.
Not a bad way to describe it.
Freudian slip. of the country.
Yeah.
And how this whole thing started.
Yeah. That's, it's very curious. Yeah.
It was genocidal and involved a lot of slavery and crimes against humanity.
Yeah.
Against the people who did venerate these trees.
Mm-hmm.
And for us now to say, you know, it's a little decaying. Let's cut it down and plant a new one that we might be able to sell or something. It's kind of sickening and heartbreaking. Like many things in America,
right? There's an interesting a topic in, was it religion and ecology? I think I talked about this on the Book of Casey, and we've talked about it here and there.
Yeah.
On this. Oh, by the way, that's on the Patreon. If you guys are interested in my origin story, Alex's is coming up next.
Patreon.com/arbitrarypod.
The idea of it is ecofeminism, and it's basically the study or kind of looking into the connections between things that are a little bit uncanny. Like we call Mother Earth, Mother Earth.
Oh,
it's
sure.
Feminine. The sort of fertility goddess kind of thing is related to plants and fertility and femininity and women, like that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yet then at the same time, we take and the term literally rape the earth. Like, that is used explicitly, and it's like, well, why are we using these terms in these specific ways? Like, the only country in the world that calls itself masculine is Germany. That's the fatherland. Everything else is the motherland, or the she is the ship, the country, the everything.
Yes, I was gonna say ships are ships we name after women.
Exactly. And so it's a really curious kind of dynamic where it's similar to this, where it's like, oh, maybe there's a connection with how we treat a bunch of like all these other cultural things that we do, negative and positive, that we also apply it and apply the same kind of unconscious logic to other things. Just like what you're saying, like the start of the country was based on all these horrible atrocities to actual people. And then we also do those same horrible atrocities to nature with the same ideas, like, well, it's good for us. It's good for me.
Yeah.
And it's like, huh, it's a very curious, like, philosophical and like kind of cultural rabbit hole you could just like find yourself sliding down into and being like, wow, this is a dark place.
It's very interesting. Before we slide into that rabbit hole, Casey, let's slide into our review of the pedunculate oak.
Yes, indeed. We should remind ourselves we're talking about a pedunculate oak and how in Europe they take the far one side of the spectrum to say we're going to keep these oak trees as long as possible. And I should draw one more connection, Alex.
Yes.
In our Fellowship of the Ring, the English countryside, these trees, many of them have been removed in order to do crops. You know, this is, you know, way going back into history, all over the place. So a lot of these trees are like the only ones left. And so a lot of people, like the Woodland Trust, is like, we got to protect these trees because they're ancient and there's none like it anymore. All the rest are like brand new. They're just now sprouting up.
Right.
So that's the reason that we wanted to pull it into this, is because in the show, there's all these, or in the movie, I should say, there's a lot of these oak trees like popped in through these areas. There's like these ancient trees along the countryside.
That's right.
So, anyway, those are the connections we made. If you didn't make those, sorry.
You know what? Make your own connections. We don't
care.
Yeah,
that's right.
Here's how our review works. We're going to give some final thoughts on this tree and then give it a rating of 0 to 10. Hey, should we do something fun for the cone rating?
Yeah, rings of honor.
Rings. How about this, Casey?
Ah.
This is a yes and. I'm not shooting down your idea.
Yeah.
Golden cones of power.
Oh, yes. I agree. Golden cones of power.
0 to 10, golden cones of power. Casey. Yeah, we're deciding how many we're giving to this genus of tree. Like, the, you know, 9 to the men and 3 to the elves.
Yeah, exactly.
Casey is our resident expert. We'll begin with you.
Okay, so Quercus robur, it's one of the very first trees that I learned. Like, there's a little cadre of them. It's in one of those top trees in terms of how I learned about trees. I think this tree is beautiful. I think it's a lovely big oak tree. I want to interact with it over in Europe because I think it would give me a whole different perspective.
Sure.
But here in the United States, we plant almost exclusively the fastigiate variety, the cultivar of this. I don't know why. I cannot figure out why we decided that this is the right one. But it is the same tree, but it grows up, and it just has branches that go very, very upright. We have another, I think there's one that I think maybe is called the Skyrocket, and it's almost like every branch and everything is like trying to go as far directly north or straight up as it possibly can.
Interesting.
And it's fine. They don't really fall apart because, again, they're really strong trees. They're decay resistant, but God, I hate those trees.
Yeah.
You know where we mostly like to plant them?
They sound ugly. Where?
Yeah. Underneath power lines.
Oh, good.
Yeah, go to Sellwood, and you'll see a bunch planted underneath power lines.
And you see just like a big U-shape cut out of the crown.
It's so awful.
Yeah, but those are so ugly.
Yeah, it's like planting. It's just, it makes no sense to me. And whenever it happens, you're just so frustrating because you're like, who dropped the ball on this?
Yeah, it's very clearly a bad idea.
So whatever, they've done it. It's happened. They exist. But it just looks so awful. And when they're planted like that, they're very scraggly looking trees. They don't carry for me the same poise as certain oaks that I could name that I have named before.
Sure.
I think it's fine. I think it's middle of the line oak tree in the United States and planted here. Over in Europe, though, there's like, I think there's one Planet Earth where they show fall. What I think it's, I can't remember what it is, but there's one of those shows, Planet Earth, where they show this specific English countryside oak tree, and they kind of like circle it in the way they do, and then show the changing of the seasons.
Wow.
That is spectacular. And I'm like, now that is an oak tree that I can get on board with. Otherwise, honestly, it's going to be like a 7.0.
Okay.
So it's a medium okay tree. I don't remember what we did on the solstice, right. But it was for a different reason, so this is coming from a different place.
Yeah, it's different context.
Yeah, I give the English oak, Quercus robur, or the pedunculate oak a 7.0 because it's okay, it's fine. I think once they invite me over to hang out with them, then it's probably going to raise the bar.
Oh, sure.
Yeah,
we'll get there. We'll get there, Case.
We'll get there.
We're announcing our UK tour 2023.
Hello,
2023. Oh man, I would love to go to England.
Hey, as soon as someone invites me to Kew Botanical Gardens, I cannot buy a plane ticket fast enough.
Oh, right on.
Ideally, I'll get there, even if they don't invite me. But you know what?
We'll invite ourselves.
Casey at arbitrarypod.com.
Wow. It's the first time you've ever given out your personal arbitrary email.
Yeah.
Not that it's that hard to guess what it would be.
Yeah.
Okay, 7.0 golden cones of power the pedunculate.
They only get seven. So they have to choose their most regal seven oaks to get those cones of power.
Although, you know, the most powerful are the most corrupted by the cone's power. So there's something to consider.
That's something to consider. Okay.
Give it to a young hobbit.
Yeah.
Casey, I like the pedunculate oak all right. Actually, when you said 7.0, I knew that I was right there with you. 7.0 golden cones of power.
You're kidding me.
Yeah, 100%. It's a nice, round, strong seven.
It really is.
It's right in the middle of the top half of the curve.
And they're lovely trees.
Yeah, I have nothing. I have no qualms with this tree. Mm-hmm. I think this topic of like how different places treat trees is really fascinating. I loved that conversation. But the pedunculate oak, I'll say some of those seven cones of power go to the fact that it is a evergreen oak.
It is not. It's a deciduous oak.
Oh, I thought you said it was evergreen.
Did I? I didn't mean to.
Maybe I heard evergreen.
Oh, I did say there are evergreens and there are this, but this is a deciduous oak.
Well,
species.
Never mind. Okay, it goes to some other thing.
It goes to... oh, God. I'm sorry, Alex.
No,
I
don't think you ever said it was evergreen. Yes. For some reason, I got it in my head that it was.
Damn, I must have... I think I was just inappropriately talking about too many things at once.
Potentially, Casey, as is your want.
Yeah, whoops.
And it is my want to be very single-minded and listen to one thing at a time.
How do we do this?
It's a miracle every week, my man.
7.0.
I just unceremoniously hand them to this tree. I don't know. Yeah, it's fine.
Yeah, it's like everyone's already left to look at some other tree, and you just pin the little, you know, crown on it.
Yeah,
there you go.
You give it a little pat on the bark and you walk away without saying anything. Casey, it's time for a game.
All right, here we go.
One especially for this book one of our Lord of the Tree Rings month. I've got a series of riddles, and it's up to you to tell me which genus of tree I'm talking about. This is Riddles in the Park.
I got goosebumps, Alex. I'm so excited. You spent a long time getting these ready.
So I wrote these riddles with good friend of the pod and good friend of my life, Kyle Glenn.
Hi, Kyle.
So Casey, I'm going to read these, and then you have however much time you need or want.
Okay.
And I'll repeat lines, and we'll try to guess which, again, genus.
Okay.
I'm talking about
genus of tree.
All yes,
right. I'm ready. Are you ready?
Are you ready for your... We should turn off the lights.
Yeah, we should.
We should be in a dark cave for this.
We really should. Hold on. Let's take a second. Go to the dark caves. All right.
Kyle did mention, are people going to give you flack because Riddles in the Dark is from The Hobbit, not The Lord of the Rings?
Oh, yeah. And they surely will. So, shh.
All right. Are you ready for your first riddle, Mr. Casey?
I'm ready.
In younger days, I lost my hat. When lovers' whispers reached my ears, old and caned, I take a nap and dream of bourbon, wine, and beer.
That's so good. Oh, my God. Okay, you're dreaming of bourbon, wine, and beer. You lost your cap when you were young.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm.
When lovers' whispers reached my ears, old and caned, I take a nap.
Old and caned, you take a nap. So the tree's dying, the tree's going to sleep, the tree's getting killed when it's old, when it's large, and it is all about the beard and it has a cap. Quercus.
That is correct.
Yes. Okay. All right. This is okay. So there's a lot going on there. I had to listen to a lot of things. Like, is this important? Is this a red herring? What is this?
These are dense riddles.
These are good. You guys killed it.
You maybe missed or maybe not missed, but one clue.
Yeah.
Was that when lovers' whispers reached my ears, these leaves are lobed.
Oh,
like ears.
That's so good. I did it. That was even a step too deep. I couldn't get it. Oh,
fine guessing, Casey.
Holy shit.
I mean,
shit.
My precious.
thank you, Alex. I was very upset.
Are you ready for your second riddle?
All right. I am ready.
Fertile maidens standing proud, slough their seasonal woody gowns, stitching wind without reprieve, and rise above most other trees.
Whoa. One more time. That's stunning.
Fertile maidens standing proud, slough their seasonal woody gowns, stitching wind without reprieve, and rise above most other trees.
Oh man, this is so good. Okay, Alex, here's what I'm thinking. So it sounds like it's a deciduous tree, because it loses its woody gown.
Okay.
I don't know if this is. I'm not sure. Am I interpreting that correctly?
Hints will you get from me, Mr. Casey?
All right. Why don't you stay over on your side of the cave?
Excuse me, I got a cough.
It smells so bad in here. Okay.
Excuse me.
So yeah, you okay over
got
there?
Got some fish guts stuck in my throat.
Phlegm, if you will. The other thing, maidens. That tells me that young maidens are probably maybe having a tryst underneath this tree, which lends me towards something a little more spring and sexual.
Okay.
However, standing taller than most trees leads me to think it's a gigantic tree.
Hmm.
I don't know if that's the case.
That's a good interpretation of that hint.
Yeah. Hmm. So honestly, my very first thing, I want to say Cretaceous, the Hawthorns.
Incorrect, my precious.
Okay. So
I turned into Yoda for a second. I forgot how Gollum talks.
You know what? They're actually the same character.
I can't do a Gollum impression, okay. I don't think.
All right. So goes up. It's a big, tall tree. Sheds its things. The Don Redwood.
Incorrect.
Sorry, Metasequoia glabrosabroides.
That is not a genus of tree.
Yeah, it is. Metasequoia.
Incorrect.
Damn it.
Would you like to hear the whole thing again?
Yes, I would, please.
Fertile maidens standing proud, slough their seasonal woody gowns, stitching wind without reprieve, and rise above most other trees.
All right, here's what I'm going to say.
Okay.
I'm going to say Cedrus.
Incorrect.
You're kidding me, because it drops its cones. Its cones split apart.
Are there any other genre that do the cones fall apart?
I believe the Abies does that.
Casey, you're correct.
Wow! Oh, my gosh.
Do you want to go over it?
Yeah.
Fertile maidens are the cones.
Yes.
Because they're fertile. They have seeds in them.
And they are. They're also.
They're standing proud because they grow upright.
They grow upright. Yeah. So I got that.
Good clue.
Okay.
Good job.
Very, very good clue, Alex.
Slough their seasonal woody gowns. You got that.
That was a good clue. Okay. I don't care who you are. That was a good clue.
Their cones fall apart piece by piece.
Yeah.
Stitching wind without reprieve. Stitching is a reference to needles. Needles to stitch, and without reprieve, they are evergreen.
They stay there all the time.
Yes.
In the wind.
And they rise above most other trees. They're extremely tall trees.
Yeah. Wow. Well done.
That, well done to you.
But I clearly got it wrong. I like latched onto maidens, and I was like, oh, this must be the tree that everyone has sex under.
Right.
Yeah, okay.
Well, that shows us, that tells us something about you, Casey.
Because I just really like, move on. Let's move on.
We have one more, Casey.
Okay. I'm going to get this one right.
I want to say that I'm going to read this one once.
Ooh.
Because it's a little longer, so it has four stanzas. So you got to let me, okay. You got to let me go through all of them.
Okay.
I'm going to read it once, and you have one opportunity to guess.
Oh, geez. And after that, you kill me and take the ring.
Yes.
Take the cone of power.
Correct.
Okay, God.
I strangle you in a riverbed.
Okay.
I'm forbidden, Rose's daughter. I am cleaner than the water. I am golden, flavored smoke, festive harvest of the folk. I am sweet. I am sour. Autumn bearing, vernal flowers, thousand faces, none the same. Tell me, dost thou know my name?
Oh, Alex. Is this Malice?
It is Malice. Oh, well done, Casey.
God, the apple. You ended on the apple, the sweet, savory, sexy apple.
Yeah.
That one was good. That was beautifully written.
Like that one.
Say that. Can you give it one more time?
Sure. I'm forbidden, Rose's daughter, Rose family.
Yep. Forbidden for allegedly, forbidden fruit. Uh-huh. That, okay, yeah.
I am cleaner than the water. Mm-hmm. We've talked about how people used to drink cider above water because it was
exactly right.
Disinfected. I am golden, plenty of golden apple mythologies.
Golden delicious, yeah, right.
Flavored smoke, applewood. Yep. Festive harvest of the folk, harvest things.
Yeah.
I am sweet. I am sour.
Whatever.
Autumn bearing vernal flowers.
So good. That's so beautiful.
Thousand faces. There are many, many varieties of apple, but none the same. Tell me, dost thou know my name?
Tell me, dost thou know my name?
Would
Alex.
Thou love to live deliciously?
you got to do this professionally. Like, how can we make this a professional thing that you do?
Kyle and I, Casey, thanks for that setup. Kyle and I have a brand new business. It's called Riddle to You.
No, Riddle Me Bat.
Riddle Me Bat? Riddle Me Bit?
Riddle Me... I thought it was Riddle Me Bat.
It's something like that.
Anyway, it was really good.
We're going to sell riddles. You tell us what you want us to write a riddle about. We'll sell it to you for $5.
Yeah. Then you got a new riddle. Fresh made.
Plus brilliant. A service charge.
Yeah, of course. And that's going to be $12.
Duh. Thanks for letting me do that, Casey. This has been Riddles in the Park. Casey, it's time for a completely arbitrary Q&A.
Oh, man. Our transitions are on point.
This week's question is from Jared Belton. Jared writes, I encountered something fairly strange. A friend sent me this video, and I've never seen anything like it, but thought you were the best people to ask. Huge fan of the pod. Keep doing what you're doing. Love you guys. Many thanks. Thank you, Jared.
Back at you, Jared.
Casey, have you watched this video?
I have watched this video.
Please describe it for the people.
So this video is one of our dear listeners who has taken has a video, and it's someone walking up with their phone or their video camera and showing what's going on these trees. And there's a few examples. They obviously zoom in on one, and it is a tree that literally looks like a portion of the stem has just in slow motion exploded out. Like an actual, not explosion, but like, you know, you get a big infectious thing and then it's like, bleh. That's kind of what it looks like to me.
Totally. It is broken pustule like.
Yes.
I would also say it looks like a cannonball came through the other side.
Yeah, right.
And like this is the exit wound.
Yeah, but there's no entry wound.
No, there's like, no entry wound. And it's like black.
Yeah.
Like the wood inside the wound is like black.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
What's
happening?
It's terrifying. That is what I believe, having literally not looked at it more than this video, that to me appears to be what's called a canker.
Wow.
And a canker is a fungal infection on a tree.
Okay.
And it grows. Usually it creates a literal canker, like a small little bit of necrosis, dead wood, and it kills just a small section where, you know, fungus, they grow outwards from a central, you know, wherever the pore lands, they just grow outwards in every direction. So they create very circular things.
Yeah.
Whereas a bacterial infection is very much more of a blob where it doesn't grow perfectly outwards in in a circle. So that one, you can see there's a nice little circle there, like a thing. What we could do is we call those in the biz bullseye cankers.
Bullseye canker.
That's right. And the reason they called that is that each year you have year one, you get this little canker. There it is. It starts. You're like, oh, cool. There's a canker. The tree says, whoa, I'm being attacked. There's a canker. And it compartmentalizes around that canker. So it basically puts a big wall of protection for the rest of the tree around it.
Okay.
Sometimes if it's a certain kind of canker, that does it. And it's good. It's a year infection. Then the plant or the fungus goes off to the next thing to infect the next thing.
Yeah. Doesn't it create like a barrier of dead cells around the canker so it can't pass that?
Yeah, essentially. It's kind of like they don't create, it's not necessarily the cells are dead. They just make like this wall of cells that has all these different chemicals in it that create this wall.
Okay.
So in doing that, I think it ends up killing certain of those cells. But then on the inside, it just leaves those cells to die, essentially.
I see.
So the fungus then takes over those cells, and then now you have this little dead necrotic spot.
Mm.
So yeah, it's exactly right. So that wall then, if it works, contains the fungus, and it can't get anywhere else because now it's basically used up everything that it wanted. But every now and then, the fungus will go woong and break through that wall, and then it will infect another ring of new growth the next year afterwards.
Casey, this reminds me of a story.
Ooh, what is the story?
The people of Rohan were being invaded by the orcs of Mordor.
I remember this.
And they traveled to the other side of this sort of meadowy pasture landscape to a place called Helm's Deep.
Yes.
And there they had their last stand.
Yep.
And at a certain point in this battle, there is a hole blown open in the wall.
Oh my God.
By an Olympic torch carrying kamikaze orc.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
I think he's an Uruk-hai.
Yeah, aren't they all?
Sorry. Go ahead.
Alex, perfect.
And
man,
the orcs flood through.
I was going to say, what happens next? We're hanging on every word.
The orcs flood through.
We'll talk more about that next week.
Oh, Casey.
Anyway, it's exactly what it is. That's it. So the orcs are the disease.
Of course.
And then you have the... did you just spit?
Yeah, I spit on the ground for the orcs.
Good. So yeah, that's exactly it. So every year that happens, as the tree gets bigger, two things happen. One, now you have dead wood, so the tree has to then grow outwards to try to, it puts on new wood, but then it compartmentalizes and tries to cover up over the new wood, the new wound with new wood.
Got it.
So there's also dead bark, where the dead bark on that area, that's the bark is on the outside, just underneath that cambium is where that infection was. So that section of dead bark basically just stops growing. It starts to become kind of crusty and it'll break apart from the other bark. So then you have this place where you have two ends of bark, one on the right side, one on the left side, one on the top, one on the bottom, or, you know, in this big circle, as you see in this video. Then as the tree is growing out, that fungus or that canker will then grow out every single year with it and kind of get bigger and bigger and bigger.
Mm.
So the tree's getting bigger and bigger and bigger. Then all of a sudden you have this effect where the bark that is still attached to the very outside from the very get-go,
yeah,
it kind of looks like it starts to get peeled back.
Yeah.
Because the growth of the tree underneath is slowly pushing it out, but the fungus is also growing out, so it looks like it explodes outwards.
Yeah.
Because it's basically the tree tries to put callus tissue around the edge, then that edge gets expanded a little bit, then it has to put callus tissue on that edge, and then it's expanded a little bit. So it's like trying to contain it every single year as the tree gets bigger, and so the wound gets bigger, and the tree gets bigger, so you get this effect where it kind of looks like it explodes.
It's like a flayed
outwards.
Kind yeah. of shape.
That's exactly right.
All right.
So that is, like I said, I don't know the species of tree. I don't know anything about what kankers are out there, so I can't tell you any more than this, but it is, I think what did they say? It was an ash, wasn't it?
Yes.
Yeah. So it's probably a... actually, I don't even know what kind of species it is, but either way, there are certainly kankers that get on trees and do this all the time, and it's a very common pathogen on trees. So that's what I think that is a the species of pathogen, not sure. The species of tree, not sure, but it's a broad spectrum, kind of like some pathogens do this to some trees, and you can see it's just like, you know, a conch coming out of a tree. You know that it's a basidiomycete fungus attacking a tree, and this is the fruiting body.
Well, of course you know that.
It's obvious, Alex. Jeez.
Jared, thank you so much for your question. If you have a question about trees for Casey, or a question about any of my interests for me, email us at arbitrarypod@gmail.com. That's arbitrary pod. Join us on Instagram @arbitrarypod, or support this podcast, patreon.com/arbitrarypod. Get 2 bonus episodes a month in the Arboretum, or join the Cone of the Month Club for cone stickers and info cards every month in your mail. And if you've got a couple minutes, be a part of our big campaign push for ratings and reviews of this podcast on your platform of choice. It really helps us out. Casey Clapp.
Alex Croson.
We have what? Boromir has just been slain.
Yep. Boromir's fallen, which is, you know what? I've heard a lot of people. Some people are like, you know what? Good. He was on his way out anyway. He was going to do some bad things.
Oh, I don't know about that.
Other people have said, well, honestly, he's just the leader of another great house somewhere down the line. So reincarnation's real.
There, yeah, sure. Why not?
Anyway,
probably especially in Middle Earth. Yeah, prevalent.
Yeah, exactly. Continue.
The Merry and Pippin have just been kidnapped by the orcs.
They did.
Frodo, Sam making their way across the river.
Mm-hmm.
That's you and me in a boat.
Yeah.
So we are currently in a boat crossing the river.
Exactly. And we're going to be cold tonight.
On the other side of that river, lunch.
Yeah.
We'll be right back to recording, but we'll see you next week
for the second installment.
That's right.
The Lord of the Tree Rings.
Yes, the two, I don't know.
Trees. Anyway, bye, Alex.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Completely Arbitrary. We'll see you next time. Bye.
Bye-bye. Completely Arbitrary is produced by Alex Croson and Casey Clapp.
Our artwork is by Jillian Barthold, and our music is by Aves and the Mini Vandals.
And you can support the podcast at patreon.com/arbitrarypod.
And find additional readings at completelyarbitrary.com. Thanks for listening.